It's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's golden age. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levenier. Coming up in this hour, drama. Later on, we hear the Hallmark Playhouse with Ronald Reagan and the story Salad Days. Right now, it's the Silver Theater with a CBS broadcast from March 12, 1939, called Love is Where You Find It, a story of two vaudevillians featuring Joe Kearns, Lee Tracy, Shirley Ross, and Conrad Nagel as host.
International Silver Company presents The Silver Theater, starring Lee Tracy and Shirley Ross in Love is Where You Find It, directed by Conrad Nagel. Brought to you on behalf of two of the greatest names in silverware, International Sterling, world-famous solid silver, and 1847 Rogers Brothers, America's finest silver plate.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Conrad Nagel greeting you from the stage of the Silver Theater in Hollywood and bringing you the 24th in our new series of dramatic productions. The house lights dim and the silver curtain rises on Act One of Love is Where You Find It by True Boardman and Grover Jones. Our stars, Lee Tracy and Shirley Ross, as Eddie and Sally McCoy, with Joseph Kearns as Joe Stone. The time, October 1927. The scene, the Lyceum Theater, leading vaudeville show house of a large Midwestern city where Eddie and Sally, the real McCoys, are billed as the headline act. As our story begins, Eddie McCoy is on the stage, nearing the end of an eccentric dance that's a kind of magic caught in rhythm, while backstage in the wings, Sally McCoy talks to Joe Stone, personal manager of the McCoys.
Hey, what's Eddie done to that routine? Why, it's better than ever.
That's a new flying wing he worked out. I think it looks easy. Try it sometime.
Not for Joseph. Look at that guy, will you, Sally? The real McCoy, and that's no lie. Not when you're talking about Eddie.
When you're talking about Sally, it's something different, isn't it, Joe?
Huh? Oh, you're crazy, Sally. I think you're okay.
You don't need to lie to me, Joe. I know how you've always felt about me. You like me, sure, but you still wish Eddie hadn't married me. I'm afraid I'm going to hold him back, aren't you?
Oh, I never said that.
Well, not to me, Joe. Maybe not even to Eddie. But I know. And just remember this. If I thought you were right, I'd make Eddie drop me out of the act. But you're wrong, Joe. I just know I've got something.
Sure you have.
Wait. Eddie's got a new finish on this dance. Watch it.
Swell.
Joe, don't mention to Eddie what I said.
Oh, boy, what a house.
Whew.
What a house. I love him.
Hello, Eddie.
Oh. Hiya, 10%. Wait a minute, I gotta take a bow. Okay, Sally, kid. Give me a song. Pop it up this time. Now.
Eddie, I told the conductor to play it slower. I told him
to play it faster, tempo. That's what your singing needs.
But if you'd only let me try my own style.
I'm running this act to use the style I tell you. Now, go on. There's your introduction. Good luck, kid. Huh. She's a great gal, Joe, but she's a little bullheaded. Keeps telling me I don't know how she should sing. Gonna have to start beating her every Thursday or something. So what are you doing here anyway? I thought you were in Chicago.
I gotta talk to you, Eddie. Business. After the show.
After the show, nothing. Spill it now.
It's an offer, Eddie. Marshall of the Keith Time is out front this afternoon. He likes you, too. He'll book you for 20 weeks back east with a crack at the palace to finish it off.
Oh, why don't that conductor keep the tempo going? Her song's dragging. What? The palace, huh? Well, that's swell. When do we open?
Not we, Eddie. Just you.
What?
Now, don't get sore. But he wants the act without Sally. He likes your dances and your comedy routines, but...
Look, what's the idea of you wasting my time? You know, I don't play any dates without my wife.
Now, you gotta be sensible, Eddie. You're a name in vaudeville, but vaudeville's slipping. These talking pictures are...
Listen, vaudeville will still be cleaning up when the talkies are in a museum. And get this straight. Sally and I are doing all right, see? We got a couple of thousand in the bank, plenty of dates to keep us busy. Till we get ready to retire on that little farm of ours, we work together.
Farm? You didn't go buy a farm.
No, we're going to. Kids always wanted a farm. I'm going to give it to her.
Don't make me laugh. Eddie McCoy playing nursemaid to a cow. Hey, wait a minute. Maybe that's the answer. So Sally wants a farm. We'll let her have it. Buy one up in Connecticut or somewhere. And then Sally can live there while you keep on working.
And I see my wife once a month, huh? Listen, Joe, this is a two-act, see? It's not a single. It's Eddie and Sally McCoy, and it's going to stay that way. Whatever we do together.
You're crazy.
Crazy, am I? Listen, you shriveled brain nickel pitcher. That kid out there happens to be the works as far as I'm concerned, see? Introduction, verse, and all the chorus.
Oh, I know that, Eddie, but...
But nothing. Here's the finish now. Now, listen, keep your trap shut about this in front of her, see?
Okay, but it's your funeral.
Yeah? We're watching this new routine we do together. That kid ain't a great dancer. I don't know show business. Had a girl, Sally, that was real singing.
It's too fast, Eddie. Honest, if I sang it a little bit
slow. Good, Pat. What's our introduction? Come on, let's go. Let's show him a real dance now, kid. That a girl is beautiful.
Eddie, what did Joe want?
Never mind, never mind. Those high kicks coming up now. Really aim for the moon.
I'll try, Eddie. Eddie, what did Joe want?
Nothing. Nothing at all. Remember that new step.
Hope so. How is that, Professor?
Well, now here's your single spot. Now watch those kicks and make them good.
Yeah, right. Oh, Eddie!
Wally, get up, kid. Come on, go right ahead. They think it's a part of the dance. It's a gag. Get up.
Okay. I can't, Eddie.
Sally.
My back. Eddie.
Sally. Oh, shut up, you fools. Can't you see she's hurt? Curtain. Give me that curtain. Bring down the curtain.
Look, nurse, I have a heart. The doc said I could see her this morning.
All right, Mr. McCoy. You may go in, but just for a minute. She's to be taken up for the x-rays right away.
Oh, yeah. Okay, nurse.
Eddie. Oh, Eddie.
Hello, Punkin.
Darling, you look awful. Eddie, you haven't been up all night.
What? Oh, I don't matter.
Oh, Eddie, I'm so sorry.
Sorry? Was it your fault they had a loose board on the stage? Come on, now. Tell me. How are you feeling?
I don't know. That is, I don't feel anything. My legs, Eddie. Just numb, sort of.
Oh, I don't mean a thing. You're going to be swell. And in just a day or two, I've got plans for us, see?
I'm sorry, Mr. McCoy, but I really think you should go.
Okay. I got to go, kid. So long for right now. You think you could use a kiss for good luck?
I think so. Oh, Eddie, darling.
Oh, Nix. Now, Nix on the tears. Just need those x-rays to prove it, that's all. We'll be dancing together within a week.
Sorry, Mr. McCoy. And so you see, these x-ray plates tell their own story, Mr. McCoy.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they do. Okay, Doc. Yes. Now, what does it all mean?
Not very good news, I'm afraid. Your wife must have absolute rest, flat on her back for at least 2 months. Then she should be able to manage a wheelchair. Within 6 months, she should be walking.
And dancing, Doc?
Dancing? How long? I think Mrs. McCoy had better forget about dancing.
You mean, well, for a long time, huh?
That isn't what I said, son.
Oh. In other words, just forget about it, huh?
I'm afraid so.
I get it. Thanks. Oh, Doc.
Yes?
Don't let Sally know that you told me, will you?
All right, son. Just as you say.
You may go in, Mr. McCoy, but you better not stay too long.
Thanks, nurse.
Eddie.
Hello, kid.
Come in, darling. Joe's here.
Yeah? Oh. What's up, 10%?
Eddie, Joe has news. Swell news. Tell him, Joe.
Yeah, tell me.
Why, I got booking for the act that 20 weeks on the Key Circuit back east.
And a week at the palace to finish it, Eddie.
For who?
Why, for us, you and me. Who else would it be?
Both of us, huh?
Oh, I know what you're worried about, Eddie. But I'll be all right in time. We don't have to start for 2 whole months.
Oh, 2 whole months, huh? This is a contract. Huh? You don't mind if I read it, do you, Joe?
No.
I knew a guy that signed something like this once and woke up to find he'd joined the Foreign Legion. In fact, all right, 10%. Where is it?
Where's what?
The joker, the clause in this contract that tells what happens if Sally can't work the act with me in 2 months.
Eddie,
Answer me. What does it say about that? I'll tell you. Without reading it, I'll tell you. It says that I have to go on anyway as a single, doesn't it?
Well, maybe it does, Eddie.
Get out of here.
Eddie, it wasn't Joe's fault. It was my idea.
Your fault?
Yes, I... Joe beat it with
you. Listen, Eddie.
Go on, Joe. You mustn't be sore at him, darling. I had Joe draw up this contract. I didn't know you'd talk to the doctor. You did talk to him, didn't you?
Sure, yeah, I talked to him.
Then why should we pretend, darling? There's no telling when I can dance again, and you can't just lay the act off indefinitely.
Why can't we?
Well, this Keith booking is a big thing.
Maybe so, but it's not for us. We got another date to play, one we can still play together. Here, take a look at these.
Pictures. Pictures of...
Pictures of the best farm in Kendicott County. 114 acres of fertile land, a good barn, a modernized house, two cows, a horse, 246 chickens, all for the modest sum of 2,000 smackers down, and the rest when the sheriff catches it.
Oh, Eddie, it's wonderful. What's it got to do with us?
Here, look. Here's a view from the front porch, see? You'll be able to sit out here and watch me while I'm doing the plowing. Did you know that we're going to grow 8-foot corn on the McCoy farm? Because we are. I got an idea.
Eddie, will you quit it?
Quit it?
Look, I know what you mean, Doc. And you do it, too, but well, we're not going to buy a farm. Not for years yet. I'll go back and...
We have bought one. That is, unless I gave that real estate guy our $2,000 for nothing.
$2,000? But that's nearly all we'd save.
So what? We own something worth owning, don't we?
Oh, but, Eddie, it's all crazy. You don't belong on a farm.
What do you mean? Now, listen, Pumpkin Face. This is really a break for us, see? We might have gone on forever, beating it from town to town, living in a trunk, playing 2-for-a-nickel theaters or 3-for-a-nickel audiences. Well, I'm sick of all that.
Are you, Eddie? Are you honest?
Sure I am.
But you never said you wanted a farm. I was the one who
what
always...
What if I didn't say so? I got thoughts of my own, haven't I?
Oh, darling. Hey, Eddie. We don't know anything about farming, either of us.
So what? What is it to learn? You plant stuff and it grows. You feed cows and they give milk. You hatch chickens and they lay eggs or something. Simple as a Walsh clog routine. Learn it. What is there to learn? I tell you, it's a cinch. We're in the dough right now. Take it from me, Mrs. McCoy. We are in the dough.
Once again, the lights dim and the silver curtain rises on the concluding act of Love Is Where You Find It, starring Lee Tracy and Shirley Ross as Eddie and Sally McCoy. Three months have passed. Eddie has refused finally and completely to accept the offer to play his act alone in the East. And now with Sally well on the road to recovery, there comes the day when they arrive at the farm, which is to be their new home.
Oh, Eddie. Eddie, it's perfect. Just like the pictures of it. I thought places were never really as swell as they look in pictures.
Best gol darn farm in the section, by cracky. And modern. Say, look, it's even got a pump in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And look, here's the window where you look out and watch me plowing. That is, until you're up and around, and you'll be doing the plowing while I watch.
It's a deal. But, Eddie, there's an awful lot of ground. Do you think you can run it?
Can I run it? Listen, I've hired a guy for a week or so to show me the ropes. Then I'm on my own. Inside of 2 months, this place will be the talk of the state. I'm up at 5 tomorrow to start work.
Did you say 5? You? Well, you haven't been up before 10 o'clock in 10 years. 5 o'clock, Eddie.
Well, then I'll settle for a 6:15. Well, where's that housekeeper? Mrs. Harkness! You gotta get to bed, you know that? That trip all the way down here was a little... Well, Samuel, my boy, if you haven't made a farmer out of me by now, I am just a dope. Here's your pay.
Look, Mr. Eddie, I ain't saying this just because I want the job, but can't you keep me on? You know, you got more spunk than any city feller I ever seen, but the best farmer I know would have his hands full trying to run this place alone. Why, I'd even take less pay if
Samuel,
you...
you're a great guy and a pal, but I can't do it. I got to get the farm on a paying basis, and for now... That means a one-man show. So it's so long, Samuel boy.
Eddie.
Huh?
Tired, aren't you, honey?
Oh, me? From a little plowing?
I watched you. You'll kill yourself if you keep on working so hard, darling.
Oh, it's
Simple. A horse does all the work. I just go along for the ride. Anyway, I got to get that corn in by the end of the week.
Our 8-foot corn.
And that's what it's going to be.
Eddie, I walked a little today.
Oh, it's swell. You what?
I walked. Mrs. Harkness helped me at first, and then I got nearly across the room by myself. I was going to just get up and surprise you, but I would have felt like the leading lady in a dramatic act.
Sally! Just like nothing, she comes out with it. No fanfare, no vamp, no introduction, just... I walked today, Eddie. Why, kid, that's the news of the century. With you up and around, the McCoy farm is really gonna go places.
Oh, Ms. McCoy.
Yes, Mrs. Harkness.
Afraid you better tell your husband. The pump's busted again.
Oh, darn that thing anyway. All right, I'll tell him. Eddie.
Ma. Hi, you pocket face.
Eddie, the pump's broke. What are you reading?
There's a care and treatment of the young pig.
Oh, you're kidding.
Well, the guy's got to learn, doesn't he? Incidentally, did I tell you my new idea? I'm going to get a phonograph and a rooster of a, you know, record with a rooster playing, and then I'll put it out in the middle of the night just as I turn on the lights in the hen house, and the hens will think it's morning. They'll start laying eggs. Not only that, I'll figure out a way to make our cows give contented milk.
Eddie, what's
now,
wrong?
Wrong?
Tell me. Whenever you start an ad-lib gag routine, I know something's worrying you.
What do you mean? Everything's swell. Well, maybe those potatoes aren't doing so good.
You're about fed up, aren't you, Eddie?
Fed up?
With this, the farm, all of it. You know, sometimes I think you'd give your right arm for grease paint and footlights again.
Don't talk nonsense. I'm crazy about the farm. Vaudeville? Leave that to those guys who don't know any better. Me, I'll stick to the pigs and clover. Atta boy, maestro. Keep up that old tempo. Oh, Sally. Hi, I didn't hear you come in.
Go ahead and dance, Eddie.
No, oh, I just happened to hear that music on the radio, and I felt like practicing, you know, just to see if I still could.
You still can.
Well, who wants to? Say, have you been outside? How's the weather?
It's starting to rain.
Rain?
Yes, Eddie, it looks like a storm.
But it can't rain. Not now, Sally. It'll ruin that corn. It can't rain, do you hear? It can't rain.
Oh, darling, I'm so sorry. And you worked so hard.
Oh, well. What's a little corn? We got other things coming up, haven't we? It wasn't going to be as high as I wanted anyway. Next year, I'll start it earlier.
Next year, Eddie?
Sure. What do you mean?
You're not fooling me. There was a telegram came for you while you were outside.
A telegram, eh? Where is it?
The operator read it to me over the phone.
She did, huh?
It was from Joe Stone, Eddie. He wants to know why you haven't answered his letters about that Broadway show.
Well, this sounds like a lot of Greek to me.
Oh, so it's Greek to you, Eddie. You don't know that Ken Marshall wanted to book you in the Keith Circuit that time is going to do a musical show on Broadway, huh?
No, what if he is?
And he wants a guy called Eddie McCoy as his featured comedian.
What? Then he's out of luck. Eddie McCoy just happens to be out of the business.
Is he? Maybe that's why Eddie McCoy listens to the radio every time he thinks I'm not around. Maybe that's why he subscribed to Variety and had it sent general delivery to the post office so I wouldn't know. Oh, darling, who do you think you're kidding?
All right, so I read Variety. What about it? Well, there's no harm in checking up on what's happening to your old pals, is there? You remember the O'Donnells? Well, I read last week...
Eddie, you're going to take that Marshall offer.
Am I? Well, what about you?
Oh, I'll be all right. I'll stay here. You can hire a couple to come and run the farm, and I'll stay with them.
That's swell. And when do I see you? Look, kid, the McCoys work together, see? And if it's in show business, that's swell. If it's farming... That's swell, too.
But it can't be, Eddie. You can't just stay on here. You've tried, I know you have, but any man has to work where his heart is. And your heart's in show business. It always has been.
Now, that's where you're wrong, Pumpkin Face. If anybody knows where his heart is, I do, see?
But, darling, you can't just... Eddie, listen to me.
Yeah?
If we could work together again, the old two-act, Eddie and Sally, the real McCoys, Would you do it?
Oh, what's the sense of a question like that, baby? You know the doctor said that you couldn't dance again.
Yeah, but maybe I can... Eddie, I want you to promise me something.
Promise you what?
That if I can make them want me too, not just because I'm your wife, but for myself, we'll go back, both of us.
That don't make sense. I thought you loved the farm.
Well, maybe I do. But maybe there's something else I love even more. Promise me, Eddie. Please, you've got to. Please.
Oh, Treatments. What kind of treatments?
Well, I don't know. He's a special kind of doctor for cases just like mine. I know we're low on money, dear.
Oh, who's thinking about the dough? What I'm worried about is how you're going to get into town.
Well, I fixed that too, Eddie. Mrs. Munger just down the road drives into market every Thursday afternoon, and I can go with her.
Yeah, that's swell. But look, Pumpkin Face.
Yeah?
I don't want you counting too much on this. You get me? The other night, I was just in a stew on account of that rain wrecking the corn. It's okay with me if we never leave the farm.
Is it, darling?
Sure. Oh, I almost forgot to tell you.
What?
That subscription to Variety. I canceled it yesterday.
Oh, Mr. McCoy.
Yeah? What is it, Miss Harkness?
Can you come into the house? Quick, it's important.
Sure. Well, what's all the shooting for?
Mrs. McCoy called from town just now on the telephone.
The phone? Why don't you let me talk to her?
Well, she couldn't wait, but she says for you to listen on the radio right away.
The radio?
Yeah.
Well, turn it on, then.
She said that doctor of hers is going to make a speech or something like that.
Her doctor is going to make a speech. So what? You know, Mrs. Harkness, just between you and me, I wish she wouldn't count so much on these treatments she's been taking.
Of nationwide
I don't think...
originated here in the very center of the nation's farm belt.
What is...
And now
what
as our program continues, it's my pleasure to present again an artist whose performances in recent weeks on this program have been a genuine highlight of the show. That popular melody, I Cried for You, sung in her own truly distinctive style by Sally McCoy.
Doctor's treatment.
Singing
on the radio. What is this?
Listen, Mr. McCoy.
Every word. Oh, the little dope. She's dragging it again. I always told her to pick up the tempo. Come on, Sally, baby. Pick it up now.
Faster. Why should she sing faster? I like it this way. Anybody can sing fast.
Now, look, Mrs. Harkness, you may know housekeeping. When it comes to...
I cry.
Hey, wait a minute.
What a
maybe you're right.
I used to be. I found to
listen to that, will you? Of course, she's got style. She's got something I'd love you to for a nickel song Plugger hasn't got. Sing it, Sally. Sing it, Pumpkin Face. Show them what a dope I am.
I cried for you.
Hear that? And that's the kid that I tried to tell how to sing.
Well, Mr. McCoy, where are you going?
What do you think I'm going? To town to get the real McCoy.
But, Mr. McCoy, look.
Look, I don't want any arguments. See, the program's over.
Yes, the program is over, sir.
Well, listen, I'm Eddie McCoy. You understand? My wife's right inside there. She just...
Eddie.
Mrs. McCoy.
I beat it, you.
But, oh, all right.
Doctor's treatments, huh?
You're not sore?
Sore? I'm so sore I could choke somebody.
Who, me?
No. A guy named Eddie McCoy. A wise guy who knows all there is to know about how people should sing.
Oh, Eddie, I hated to lie to you. But I knew it'd take time. I had to practice and then get an audition and then sing on one or two shows till I was sure myself. Was it okay, Eddie?
Was it okay?
Then we've got an act again.
I'll say we've got an act. Sally and Eddie, the real McCoy.
You mean Eddie and Sally.
No, I mean Sally and Eddie. Top billing for the top performer. Me, I'm just a hooper with a bunch of gags. You've got a voice in 7 million.
Oh, darling, that means that we're set, both of us.
Set? What are you talking about?
Well, you know that fellow Marshall that Joe wired you about? He heard me on the air last week, and he wants both of us to work together in his Broadway show. I told him we'd wire him tonight.
Don't wake me up. I'm dreaming.
Then we do it, Eddie. We sell the farm and both go back where we belong.
Sell the farm? Now listen, Pumpkin Face. We'll still own that farm when you're 99 and I'm 104. From now on out, we spend all the rest of the year working at what we know. But summers, we're going to come back here and, you know what, Mrs. McCoy?
What, Mr. McCoy?
Some of these days, I'm going to do it if it kills me. I'm going to grow 8-foot corn.
This is Conrad Nagel again, ladies and gentlemen, thanking you in the name of our stars for that very enthusiastic round of applause. Next week, our stars will be Henry Fonda and Gail Patrick in Timber, another original story written especially for Silver Theater by Grover Jones and True Bortman. Be sure to listen. In the meantime, if you want solid silver, you want International Sterling. If you want silver plate, you want 1847 Rogers Brothers, both proudly created by International Silver Company. The music heard on this program was arranged and conducted by Felix Mills. John Conte speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Silver Theater, a CBS broadcast from March 12, 1939, on Tuned to Yesterday. This is an hour of drama. I'm your host, Mark Levenier. We'll move right on now to the Hallmark Playhouse, with a story penned by husband and wife team Bellamy and Helen Partridge called Salad Days. Though they were authors and critics at the same time, most of their work was seen in early television. From Your Favorite Story to the Kraft Theater, and this very story based on their 1952 book that was featured on the Lux Video Theater with Roddy McDowell and Parker Fennelly. This episode features an all-star radio cast of Barbara Jean Wong, Ted Osborne, Parley Bear, Eddie Firestone, Ted DeCorsia, Barbara Eiler, and Ronald Reagan. Author James Hilton hosts the story Salad Days from November 29, 1951 on CBS.
Tonight from Hollywood, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you Ronald Reagan in Salad Days on the Hallmark Playhouse. Each week, Hallmark brings you Hollywood's greatest stars in outstanding stories chosen by one of the world's best-known authors, the distinguished novelist, Mr. James Hilton.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is James Hilton. Tonight on our Hallmark Playhouse, we present a dramatization of a book by Helen and Bellamy Partridge, called Salad Days. Mr. Partridge takes his title from Shakespeare, one of whose characters talks of his salad days when he was green in judgment. This symbol of youth charmingly fits Mr. Partridge's recollections of his own youth, the trials and tribulations and also the joys and sorrows and excitements of a boy going through an upstate New York college in the gay 90s. Those of us who are old enough, and also those of us who are young enough, will get the flavor, I think. And to star as the young Mr. Partridge, we have that fine actor, Ronald Reagan.
And now, Hallmark Playhouse, presenting Bellamy and Helen Partridge's Salad Days, starring Ronald Reagan.
There often comes a moment in a man's life when something quite accidental crops up to set him thinking back over the past. When he lets down a net, as it were, into the deep sea of memory and hauls up whatever comes, the important and the trivial, the sad and the happy, the serious and the funny. Just such a moment came to a lawyer named Bellamy Partridge when his young son jogged his elbow and made him put down the evening paper.
Son, where on earth did you find that old album?
In the attic.
Let me see. Oh, yes. These are pictures of days when I was going to school. See, there I am. Look at that high collar and those pointed shoes. I certainly thought I was the OU kid in those days.
Well, what's that building you're standing in front of?
That's the old dormitory at Hobart College. That's where I lived when I was going to Hobart.
Who's that funny-looking guy?
That's Jim Chase. He was my roommate. He was a junior when I was a freshman. I can see Jim now running to the window and shouting, "Heads out."
What did that mean?
That meant the girls from the Delancey School were marching by. We'd all run to the window and hang out to watch them go by. Heads out. I can hear Jim saying it just as though I was still living those days. Heads out! Heads out! Heads out!
There's my girl. See that dark-haired one with bangs?
Who's the blonde one walking with her?
You're not supposed to ask questions about girls, freshman.
Why not?
Freshmen aren't allowed to think about girls.
I'd like to know how anyone's going to stop me from thinking about that one.
Well, if you really want to know, that's Judge Dwinell's daughter, Judy. But it won't do you any good because half the upperclassmen in school are stuck on her.
Do you know her?
Sure, I've met her. She's my girlfriend's roommate. But don't ask me to introduce you. Upperclassmen do not introduce freshmen to girls.
How do you meet a girl like that?
You have to wangle an invitation to one of the teas they give at Delancey School. But freshmen can't wangle invitations.
Well, maybe this freshman can.
You're pretty fresh, freshman.
You're pretty fresh, freshman, Jim said. And he was right, I was. But Judy Dwinell had walked by my dorm windows. I saw her pass and was hers from that moment forward.
I don't know why you wanted to be bothered with a girl.
Well, you will when you get to be a little older.
Whose picture is this?
Let's see. Oh, that's Professor Turk. I majored in English under him. Look at that black beard. When I got mad, which happened almost every hour on the hour, that beard fairly bristled. And do you see those beady little eyes? Let me tell you, when he fixed those eyes on you, it was something to really make you freeze in your seat. Professor Turk always seemed to have it in for me. I can hear him now saying, "Mr. Partridge?
Mr. Partridge? Mr. Partridge? Did you hear me addressing you, sir?"
Yes, Professor Turk.
Then why don't you answer me?
I did answer you.
Only after I spoke to you three times.
I'm sorry, sir. I didn't hear you.
Mr. Partridge, if you do not pay attention, you will leave this class as unforgivably uninformed as you entered it.
Yes, sir.
Now then, Mr. Partridge, you have chosen to write a paper for this class on the subject of college English courses. You say that some of the books that students are required to read are among the dullest that ever came off a printing press.
Well, I didn't know you were going to discuss our papers in front of the class.
Indeed. Do you think I can hold an individual session with each individual member of this class on each individual subject?
Well, I guess I didn't think about it, Professor Turk.
You didn't think much about this paper you wrote, either. Would you be so kind as to name for the class some of the books you consider the dullest that ever came out of a printing press?
Well, I was thinking of, books like The Mill on the Floss.
Were you really? And what else, Mr. Partridge?
I don't seem to remember, Professor Turk.
Oh, come now. At least have the spunk to stick up for your own convictions. What other books?
Well, some of the works of Carlyle and Thoreau.
Carlyle and Thoreau and Eliot. Authors of books that have stood the test of time as great literature. Yet you, Bellamy Partridge, a freshman at Hobart College, have decided they are dull and not worth reading. Mr. Partridge, I want you to prepare an individual paper on each of the books you have so criticized, telling me why you find them dull and unrewarding. And while you are writing the papers, kindly try to improve your abominable punctuation, Mr. Partridge.
Yes, Professor Turk.
And by the way, I rather admire your independent mind. Keep it up.
But Professor Turk continued to give me a bad time. I was the student most often called on in class, most often called down in class, most often kept after class. I thought old Turk really had it in for me until one day, toward the end of the term, he'd kept me after class. Just as I was leaving, he said to me, "Mr. Partridge, I'd like to say something to you."
"Mr. Partridge, I'd like to say something to you. I really think that you think I've been pretty hard on you this term. You do think that, don't you?
Well, sir, I...
Well, you think it. It's quite true, you know. I have been hard on you. And next term, I dare say, I shall be harder. And the term after that, probably harder than ever.
You will?
Hmm. Sometimes a student comes along and the teacher senses that he is clay and that he can be molded, strengthened, shaped into something. I think it's just possible, Mr. Partridge, that you have a very worthwhile future. And if I can prepare you better for that, then we will both be repaid for the mutual agony we have suffered in one another's company.
Well, my father's a lawyer, Professor Turk, and I've sort of intended to make that my profession.
I see. Well, you'd better go home and work on the assignments I gave you. If you don't, you're never going to get by the finals.
Yes, Professor Turk.
Didn't Professor Turk care what you wanted to be, Daddy?
He didn't think I had enough sense to know what I wanted to be. And maybe he was right.
Who's that girl?
That is Judy Dwinell. She was 17 when that picture was taken. You can see how pretty she was. I've spent long months thinking and planning and plotting how to get to a T at Delancey School. I got to a point where I couldn't work out of sheer frustration and desperation.
Mr. Partridge, I kept you after class to work, not to daydream.
I'm sorry, Professor Turk.
Oh, what on earth is wrong with you? You don't concentrate in class any longer. Your compositions don't show any thought. Something's wrong, and I want to know what it is.
Well, it's very difficult to explain, sir.
All right, my boy, out with it.
You wouldn't understand. I couldn't possibly tell you.
Oh, now it begins to dawn. Have you had much appetite lately, Mr. Partridge?
Very little, sir.
And have you been sleeping at night?
Not too well, sir.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Now, who is the young lady?
I didn't say it was a young lady.
My boy, the symptoms are all too obvious. Now, what is the problem?
Well, the problem is I'm a freshman. Freshmen can't attend the teas at Delancey School, and I haven't even been able to meet her.
Well, now, there are certain circumstances under which a freshman can attend a tea at Delancey School.
There are?
A freshman can go if he happens to be escorted by a member of the Hobart faculty.
Well, I'm afraid that isn't much help.
On the contrary, Mr. Partridge, I happen to be attending a tea at Delancey School next Friday, and I shall be delighted to have the pleasure of your company.
I'm very happy to meet you, Mr. Partridge.
Thank you, Miss Dwinell. I'm very happy to meet you, too.
You go to Hobart, don't you?
Yes. You go to Delancey, don't you?
Of course. That's where you are, you know.
Oh, sure. Sure, I know. I was just kidding. It's a nice party, isn't it?
Oh, very nice. If you like tea.
Oh, I like tea.
So do I. Well, what are you studying?
I'm an English major.
Oh, that must be very interesting.
My English prof brought me to the tea. That's him over by the door.
He introduced us. Don't you remember?
Oh, that's right. He did, didn't he? I'm all mixed up somehow today.
Oh, the teachers are motioning to us. The tea's over.
Oh, don't go.
Oh, but I have to.
I've been waiting for months to meet you. I had so much I wanted to say to you, and I haven't said any of it.
Well, perhaps we'll meet again, Mr. Partridge, and you can say it then.
I hope we'll meet again.
Well, if you hope we'll meet again, I'm sure we will.
Months that followed have become, in memory, all set against the backdrop of Judy's smile, Judy's eyes, Judy's voice.
So glad you invited me to the freshman prom, Bellamy. I don't know when I've had such fun.
Judy, will you come to all the dances with me? As long as I'm in college, will you be my date?
You don't want to tie yourself up for the next 3 years, do you?
Longer than that, Judy.
Thank you.
wonderful day for a picnic. I'm so glad you thought of it, Delamere.
I'm so glad you could come.
Our last Saturday before we go home for the summer. Are you going to miss me?
I don't know how I'm going to survive until fall. Can't I come to see you?
Oh, I'm afraid I can never make Mother understand.
But why?
Oh, don't ask me now, Bellamy. Let's just enjoy the time we have. There's so little left as it is.
Judy, do you care anything for me at all?
Oh, of course I do, Bellamy. Of course I do. On the train. It's all ready to pull out.
Will you write to me this summer?
Of course. Will you write to me?
Every day.
So will I.
Judy, will you take my fraternity pin? Will you wear it?
Yes, darling.
You know, that means we're engaged, unofficially.
Yes, Bellamy, but very unofficially.
Oh, you can't get on the train now.
I must. Goodbye, Bellamy. Goodbye.
That first summer without Judy was the longest I'd spent until then. In fact, the only ones that were ever longer were the summers I had to spend later without her.
Who's this woman here, Daddy? Gee whiz, she sure looks mad.
That's Judy's mother, Mrs. Dwinell.
She still looks mad. Did you ever meet her?
Yes, I certainly did.
Did she always look as mad as that?
Son, the first time I met her, she looked madder. School was in session again, and she'd come up to see Judy. Judy asked me to come down to the hotel to meet her mother. The situation was just about as strained as a situation could be. I can see Judy now, standing there with a desperate look on her face, saying, Mother, may I present Bellamy Partridge? Mother,
may I present Bellamy Partridge? Bellamy, this is my mother.
How do you do, Mrs. Dwinell?
How do you do?
It's a nice day, isn't it, Mrs. Dwinell?
It's going to rain.
Oh, well, I hope not.
So you're the young boy Judy told us was boying her around at school. I think that's very kind of you, particularly since you know that Judy is engaged to an attorney in Rochester.
Engaged?
Father, we're not engaged.
Well, perhaps not in so many words, but there's been an understanding for some time. You must meet Mr. Cole sometime, Mr. Partridge. He's one of the most distinguished lawyers in this part of the country. He has a beautiful home to take Judy to, and he can give her everything a young girl could want.
Mother, how can you talk like that? You know...
Now, Judy, there's no point in keeping anything from Mr. Partridge. It's only fair for him to understand the situation. You do understand now, don't you, Mr. Partridge?
Yes, I understand, Mrs. Dwinell. I understand only too well.
The page of an old album turns, and with it the years pass by. Bellamy Partridge knew he would have to struggle to get what he wanted, and so he did. He knew there was trouble ahead, and he was right. But when it all happened, like so many other things in a man's life, it wasn't much like anything he had ever expected.
Daddy, who's that old man with the white whiskers?
That was our family doctor, son. He brought me into the world. He bandaged my first skinned knee, taped my first sprained ankle. Took care of me off and on from the day I was born until the day he died. The summer I was a junior, he had a serious talk with me. One of the most serious talks I guess I've ever had with anyone. He had me come down to his office, and he said to me, Bellamy, there's something I've got to tell you.
Bellamy, there's something I've got to tell you. I don't quite know how to begin.
Now, what is it, Doc?
You know how we worried last winter about all those colds?
I haven't got a cold now.
You've got a cough. Bellamy, I've had you down here going through all those examinations because I was afraid of that cough.
Well, I'd certainly like to get rid of it before school starts. I'm carrying quite a load this term.
Son, I wish I didn't have to tell you this. But I'm afraid you're not going to be able to start back to school next month.
What do you mean?
If you're going to get over that cough, I'm afraid you're going to have to go out west for a few months.
Out west? Well, you mean I won't graduate this year? I won't finish with my class? I won't get...
I know what a disappointment this must be for you. But I also know you can meet it, Bellamy. You must meet it.
Judy, I came to see you because this was something I just couldn't write to you.
Oh, Bellamy, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Well, the toughest thing to take is leaving you. I don't mind the rest so much, but leaving you, Judy. You know how I feel about you. You've known from the beginning, haven't you?
Of course I have.
Will you wait, Judy?
Yeah, I'll wait, Bellamy.
Is this Judy's picture too, Daddy?
Yes, that's Judy's picture too. That's the way Judy looked when I came back from out west. I was sunburned, healthy, and full of self-confidence. I got off the train, saw my family, and then I got on another train and headed for Judy's hometown. I walked straight up to the door and rang the bell. I didn't care whether her mother came to the door or not. I was no longer afraid of anyone or anything, except the possibility that Judy might have changed toward me. But the minute she opened the door and said my name, I knew.
Bellamy! Oh, Bellamy!
Judy, let me look at you. You're still the prettiest girl in the whole doggone country. You know that.
Well, why didn't you let me know you were coming?
I wanted to surprise you. Is your mother here?
No, she's out. Father's in the library.
Well, I want to ask someone for your hand in marriage. It's customary to go to a girl's father, but in your case... Well, what do you think?
Well, I think you should ask Father, because that's the proper thing to do. Father, of course, won't give you an answer. He'll say you have to ask Mother. So then you ask Mother, and after she says no, you ask me, Bellamy, because I've been ready with my answer for a long time.
That's all I want to know. Which door leads to the library?
That one.
All right, here I go.
Yes?
Judge Dwinell, I want to marry your daughter.
You want to? What's your name?
Bellamy Partridge.
Partridge. Oh, of course. Well, we haven't seen you for some time, Bellamy. My eyesight isn't all it used to be. So you want to marry Judy, do you?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm afraid you'll have to ask Judy's mother.
Ask me what?
Oh, hello, Mrs. Dwinell.
My dear, this is...
I know who this is. What is it you want, Mr. Partridge?
I want to marry Judy.
Ridiculous. I won't hear of such nonsense.
It isn't nonsense, Mother. I love Bellamy and he loves me.
He hasn't even finished school, has he?
Well,
He's going to finish school. He's going to be a lawyer like his father and my father.
And how are you going to live?
We'll manage. We aren't going to wait any longer, Mother. We're leaving tonight to get married.
I'll not hear of such a thing.
Just 1 minute, Maria. You've said quite enough. Now, you sit down and listen to someone else for a change. Judy is going to be married in her own home to the man of her choice. She's going to have a proper wedding. That is, if the young folks are willing to wait long enough for us to make the suitable arrangements. Are you, Judy?
Are you, Bellamy?
Yes, of course we'll wait. But only long enough to make the suitable arrangements. That last picture in the album is the minister that married us. That was the beginning of my real happiness, the beginning of my life.
That isn't the last picture in the album, Daddy. There's one more.
Oh? So there is. Now, who do you suppose that is?
Well, I don't know, but whoever it is should have some clothes on.
That's you, my boy, at the tender age of 4 weeks.
It is? Well, I don't think that was a very nice trick to take a picture of me like that.
I think it's time this young man was in bed. What on earth are you doing with that old book of pictures?
We were just going over the story of my life, and we'd come to the beginning of a very important chapter.
What happens in it? Tell me, Daddy.
No more tonight, my boy. It's bedtime.
Well, Daddy, just one more question. Did you live happily ever after?
Son, that's an ending for fairy stories, not for life. Life isn't that simple. But taking it all in all, I've had many more good times than bad ones. And throughout all that has happened, your mother's been with me, sharing the work and the fun. So the one thing I'm really certain of is this. The luckiest moment in all my life was when I met her.
And James Hilton will return in a moment.
Thank you for being with us on the Hallmark Playhouse tonight, Ronnie. I expect your performance took many of our audience back to their own college days. It certainly brought back memories to me.
Well, to me too, Jimmy. I always enjoy your Hallmark Playhouse stories. And by the way, you know those Hallmark Christmas card trains Frank Goss was talking about earlier tonight? Well, I think they're the best addition to holiday fun we've seen in a long time, and I'm so grateful for the one given to me tonight. You know, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be an engineer.
Well, you won't have to be any kind of engineer to put the Hallmark Christmas card train together. It's a very easy thing to do. In fact, the whole idea is a delightful one.
Well, it's made my visit doubly enjoyable. Now, what's your story for next week?
Next week, we shall dramatize Marcella Tarrant's The Night of the Hayride, the story of how a lonely woman recaptured her lost life and found her happiness again. And as our star, we are delighted to have charming Loretta Young. Our Hallmark Playhouse is every Thursday. Our producer-director is Bill Gay. Our music is composed and conducted by David Rose. And our story tonight was adapted by Gene Holloway. Until next Thursday, then, this is James Hilton saying good night.
Salad Days, featured on the Hallmark Playhouse, hosted by author James Hilton, from November 29, 1951, on CBS. That brings to a close this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.